from stpetecatalyst.com.
It's Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. My name is Bill DeYoung, back here again. And today my guest is Alan Mooney Jr., who is an actor and a director and a set designer and one of the most prominent theater people, especially in Pinellas County. Hello.
Hi, Bill.
You have a new show, which I was fortunate enough to see last night, called Fully Committed.
Yes.
When I first saw it written down, I thought maybe it was, you know, a sequel to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or something. But even though there is a bit of insanity involved, that's not what it's about. In Becky Moat's Fully Committed, Alan is the only actor, and he plays somewhere between 32 and 40.
It's 32, yeah.
Okay, so it's different characters. And he does it through it. You have to see it, essentially. His name is Sam, and he's on the reservation line of a smoking hot Manhattan restaurant called, was it Foam?
Foam.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Lowercase F. O with the line over its lowercase m.
Oh, I'm glad you explained that. That's so pretentious.
It is.
And he's on the reservation line, and everybody who calls in, everybody is also portrayed by Alan, as is everyone else in the restaurant, including the hot-headed chef, the maitre d', and all kinds of oddballs. What an interesting play this was. Tell me how this came into your orbit.
This actually came into my orbit back in 2018. Patrick Brafford, who is no longer with us, the director, he approached me with it, and we originally produced it at Early Bird Dinner Theater back in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
A dear friend of mine, Roxanne Fay, she saw it a couple of times, loved it, and she got with Ward Smith at the Off Central and said, "You need to see him do this." And she pitched it to him and basically talked me into doing it again.
So this became like your parlor trick. This is what I do, is I do this guy.
It's the parlor trick I didn't know I had, nor that I really want. I pull it out every half a decade or so, and then I can put it back in the box.
Well, the thing, for those of you who are listening and are interested in this, and I know you really, really should be, Sam is on the line with, as I said, all kinds of wackadoos, as my daughter would say, and from, you know, celebrities and a lot of name dropping, a lot of pretentious New York upper crusties, as we will.
Yeah.
You have to do every one of these characters with a different voice. You do it, your body changes.
Yeah, the physicality was the big thing. That was the thing that really made this work for me, because the words are the words, and
yeah.
I'm fortunate that I'm one of those people who can learn words pretty easily, but it was the physicality of it and the different characters that gave me the through line of telling the story without it coming off the rails too much.
Well, the thing about Sam is that, and I suppose it's easy, that he pretty much never loses his cool throughout the whole thing.
He gets close, but no, he never quite loses it.
He gets very, very close. You have to see this show. It runs through March 12th at the Off Central, which is over there on First Avenue South here in St. Petersburg, and quite a wonderful show. Debbie Yonis is directing you.
Yes.
And you and Debbie have a background. As
a bit, yes.
Yeah, okay. So you guys have been together for quite a while. Did I read this as her first thing as a director?
This is her first directorial experience, yeah.
How did that come to pass? Oh, why don't you direct me?
You're not far off. When I was approached with the project, when Ward came to me and said, "Hey, I'd love to see you do this here."
Yeah.
The director who I'd worked with previously, who's passed away, I just started thinking about it, and there was really only one person I thought would work for this process. She's a brilliant woman, very talented actor.
Yes.
If you've ever seen her on stage, she's incredible.
Yes. Yeah.
She and I are very similar in the way we process the arts.
She had seen the Early Bird one. I'm assuming you guys were together in those days.
Yes, we were together back then. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had an idea of what the project was, and she knew the emotional through line that I had from doing it with a dear friend who's no longer with us and stuff. But she's really one of the only people I think I could ever trust to do something like this, to make me feel comfortable enough to do what I need to do to get where I got to go.
There's a certain level of manic energy that you have to keep up. I watched you do this, and I'm like, it never flagged. It never flagged for, what was it, 80 minutes or 80?
We're about 83, 85
okay,
minutes.
Okay. You know, how does the director help you do that?
She keeps challenging me. She
a cattle prod.
Me.
Go,
exactly.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much exactly what it is. It's just, she keeps pushing and challenging me to find new things, try different things. Yeah, and just keeping me constantly on my toes. And the fact that there's, I don't know, 115 sound cues that come throughout the show, that really sort of is a cattle prod on its own.
Who's your tech guy?
Johnny Grande.
Is our stage manager. I think I met him last night.
He is phenomenal.
Because the phone, listen, folks, the phone rings about a million times.
Yeah.
And there are several phones.
Yeah, there's several different phone calls. And again, with the trust thing, I don't know that there's another stage manager I'd trust with this like I do with Johnny. He's just, wow. He's that good. He's that focused. He's that, yeah, he's just that guy. And he's. I'm really fortunate that we're working together on this thing.
You have done several things at Off Central.
I
wrote them down because I've seen all of them. Mm-hmm. You were in Something Clean,
yes,
which I thought was quite amazing with Debbie.
With Debbie,
who was quite amazing,
yes.
But the thing, you directed Breadcrumbs there.
I did.
I saw it at job site.
Yeah.
I saw the job site version.
Yep.
But it was the same. It was Roxanne and Debbie.
Yeah. We just the three of us, Roxanne, Debbie, and I we really just wanted to work together, and we were having a hard time finding a project. So Roxanne said, "Let's just do it."
Yeah.
So we produced it ourselves. We it started at job site.
Yes.
We ran there for a couple of weeks, and then we brought it to the Off Central for another couple of weeks. And yeah,
how did that partnership come about? I mean, that's a little odd for me. Job site and the Off Central.
Well,
they both have great strong suits.
They do.
Can't see them together.
It's Roxanne.
Ah,
she's an artistic associate with Job Site Theater.
Right.
She's part of their artistic core and
yeah.
very involved there. And she also is very involved with the Off Central. And that was sort of the through line about how we got it from one place to the other. We also considered that there's two different audience bases. There's a Tampa Bay audience or Tampa audience. There's a St. Pete audience. And bringing it across the bay, even though it's not that long of a way, it really is two different audiences. And
yeah, I found that to be true,
yeah,
too.
You absolutely.
Know, I was just over at Lab on mm-hmm. Sunday and saw this new show, Sid, that they've got, and it was incredible. And mm-hmm. I was just thinking, there's so many people. You know, I talk about this with theater people a lot. There's
yeah.
so many people who aren't going to cross the bridge. I'm
yeah.
not going over there
yeah.
to see this, but they're missing something pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, StageWorks does amazing work, Tampa
yep.
Rep,
yep.
all that stuff. And maybe, conversely, people from Tampa
yep.
aren't coming to see American Stage or the Off Central or Freefall.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And St. Pete, for me, St. Pete has – no offense, Tampa, but I think St. Pete's doing it a little better. There's a little different creative edge to what's going on here in St. Pete. And that's due to, you know, the people like Ward, who's doing what he's doing, and Eric, who's an absolute genius at Freefall. And I mean, yeah.
Everybody has, as we were saying, their strong suits. And, mm-hmm. You know, I think that there are certain things that StageWorks does better than
yeah.
anybody.
Oh.
And you know, and it's a pleasure. For me, I can't get to everything, which
right.
is too bad, mostly because I hate the drive to Tampa, which is what we always talk about.
Yeah.
You directed a number, Carol Churchill's A Number.
I did, yeah.
Which was phenomenal. That was Ward and Anthony.
Anthony Gervais, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Tremendously weird.
Yeah.
But moving.
Yeah.
You know, when we take that and then we take the fact that you did No Exit too,
mm-hmm.
which I want to talk about. And
yeah.
No Exit has followed you around your career a little bit.
A little bit.
Like a lot of people. Where do you find these things? Oh, this will be good to try at.
Yeah, it's just
Central.
Some of this stuff I find and I've got a passion for, but a lot of stuff just sort of comes to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like A Number, it was a project that Ward had wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
and he and Anthony together were an incredible pairing.
Yeah,
and I was very fortunate that he approached me with it to direct it for him. And then, you know, with Mike Horn, we created that LED DNA environment
yeah.
for
the
it.
Oh, the set. Yeah.
yeah,
kudos to Mike, man.
Yeah,
he is brilliant.
He is brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
So the No Exit that you just did,
mm-hmm.
And I, of course, Cokie's in it. I can't remember the other actor's name.
Cokie was phenomenal. It was
yeah.
also Jenna Jane and,
yeah.
and Alexa Perez.
Terrific stuff. And I
yeah.
probably said this to you before, but I'd seen No Exit probably a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And always it's pretty cold fish, that show. And
yeah.
and it kind of left me cold. This is the first time I was like totally engrossed in it.
Oh. Thank you.
And yeah, well, yeah, I'm just blowing smoke at you.
Yeah,
but
of course.
But that's true.
Yeah.
Is the kind of thing that I'm going to keep directing this until I get it right
okay.
one day, until I'm an old man,
No, it's just that was – I was in No Exit several years ago at the Dalí Museum.
Yes.
We did it as a stage reading, which was great. Yes. I've now directed it, and I can say goodbye to it because I'm very happy with what we created. But yeah, for me, it was the environment that made it different. In that really intimate space at the Off Central, you really bring the audience along for the ride there. And
I think that was the difference between that one and the one that I had originally seen. I think it was in Savannah.
Yeah, you don't have a choice but to be involved and engaged in the story.
And the whole thing is so claustrophobic you also tell me about Nocturne, which you just did over at 620. Yeah. We talked about that for the Catalyst.
Yep.
But that was also that's a one person show, very intimate in that tiny space.
Yeah. It's another really kind of off the wall sort of thing. It's a beautiful story written by Adam Rapp. About a guy who has a very unfortunate set of circumstances in his younger life, but a one-man show, and it's a retelling of everything that he's gone through. That was a project that came to me from the actor, Drew.
Yes.
He brought it to me, and I had always wanted to work with Bob, and at Bob's space at 620, and, you know, the answer is always yes there. So
I don't have a bio on you. I mean, I know that you came up through, like, the West Coast Players, and the early bird and that kind of stuff. But where are you from originally?
I'm from here.
Yeah?
I grew up in Seminole. I'm like multi-generation Pinellas County.
Hey.
Which is one thing I love about your work is because there's a lot of my family history that goes back through the city of St. Pete and the green benches and all of it.
Mine too.
Yeah. No, but I grew up here. I grew up in the city of Seminole.
Seminole High School. Okay.
I studied theater at Greensboro College in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Why there? I did see on some bio sheet.
I'd auditioned for and had some offers from a lot of different schools. The reason I picked Greensboro was it was a small school, about 1,100 students, about 70 kids in the theater department.
Yeah.
I picked it because I knew I'd keep working. And if I wasn't on stage in an acting class, I'd be in the scene shop, I'd be in the costume shop, I'd be constantly working. Instead of a bigger university like Florida State or University of North Carolina, I looked at, where you're lucky you hit the main stage by your junior year.
Well, was theater something that came to you in high school?
It started there. Yeah, it started in high school. I had an incredible drama teacher in high school, Nancy Topper and her husband Tim. And yeah, they just sort of fanned that flame, and it was pretty fantastic. I've also got one of my family members is heavily involved in theater, Jason Tucker. He's a musical director and director. He's done a lot of stuff in the area. That helped also.
So you go to Greensboro, and it's sort of like, this is my springboard.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
were you going to go to New York and be famous?
I wasn't sure what I was going to do. It was strange. That was kind of my plan.
Yeah.
My second year in school, I had a roommate who was a refugee from Bosnia. Mm-hmm. I asked him why he was here, and his answer to me was, so I can learn more about the arts and go home and teach people how to heal with it. Mm. And I'm 20 years old at the time, and that was the most profound thing I've ever heard. So the idea of being a Broadway star just sort of kind of dissipated after that. It was more about just focusing on what you're doing and the impact it could have on anyone.
Well, healing, that's a broad stroke.
Very broad.
And so How did you take that and run with it?
I took it as even that young, knowing that no matter what I do in my life, I'm never going to understand what he's gone through.
Yeah,
because I'm fortunate. I'm one of the lucky ones. I was adopted at birth by parents who loved me from day one, who took care of my sister and I. No problem.
Beautiful.
I could never understand what he went through. Mm-hmm. Can't even imagine it. But it made me realize that, you know, there's more to this thing, the arts, than just standing on stage and people clapping for you. Because when you're young, you know, you like the applause, to sing and blah, blah, blah.
It's entertainment.
Yeah, but it really made me just start thinking differently and deeper about it. And I got into more than just, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein and Lerner and Lowe.
Yeah, no, stuff, but you've done your share of that kind of stuff.
I have done my share of that stuff.
Coming up through the
ranks.
Yeah, sure. You know, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
But what you're saying is that you're more drawn to shows and to projects that kind of say something.
Yeah, or tell a story that's worth being told. I mean, you can do Oklahoma for the 97,000th time, or you can find a piece like, you know, even something as silly as Fully Committed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing heavy. This is not going to win the Pulitzer for anything, but it's a different story. It's a different story that's a lot of fun that deserves to be told, which is the same thing with No Exit. It's an older show, but the story still makes sense.
Yeah.
The story is still important in the world we live in today.
Well, I would say the story, once you kind of understand what the story is, it makes sense.
Yeah.
If you go into it blind and you aren't ready to tune into that, you're going to just flounder around and go, what the hell did I just see?
Yeah.
You know, and I've frankly seen quite a few shows that I still feel that way about.
Sure.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just want to be entertained.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just want the old soft shoe.
Sure.
You know, and then sometimes there's Les Mis where you want to be manipulated emotionally.
Yep.
What do you like best as a director or an actor? Because I'm seeing you do both.
I like working as a director more because it's got a wider scope to it. Mm-hmm. It's not just working as one character with one set of lines and a definitive idea of what you're doing. I prefer to have more stuff going on. So as a director, I've got different actors to work with, a stage manager, I've got a designer to work with, or I design the set myself because I enjoy that. It gives me the opportunity to explore more things in different ways than it does just being an actor. So
is West Coast Players still around?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Are you still involved with them? Or
no, I'm not. I got involved with them in the mid-2000s.
Uh-huh.
They were having a rollover on their board of directors and asked if I'd be interested in stepping up because I'd served on the board of directors at 8 o'clock theater before that.
Yeah.
At the time I came into their board of directors, they were losing their performance space and had nowhere to go. So the people that I had involved with the theater at that time, some of them are still very close friends of mine, we created a new environment for them. We found 4,000 square feet in an industrial building, and we turned it into a 92-seat theater that they're still selling out this day. Yeah,
you know, I think that you know, that with the focus, especially with like what the Catalyst does and the other media outlets on professional theater, and there's such great ones around here. You know, the work that community theater groups are doing is often quite amazing.
Oh, some of it's astounding.
The Francis Wilson Playhouse up at West Coast Players, 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock theater, especially. I mean, there is no comparison in community theater to the level of production quality and value that you see at 8 o'clock theater.
Let's just, for the record, explain to people the difference between community theater. Professional theater basically just means you're paying your people that are getting paid to do it. That's the way Ward explains it to me.
Yeah,
that's an oversimplification.
I don't think that's an oversimplification at all. That's exactly it. But, and again, with 8 o'clock theater specifically, having worked there as many times as I have, I've not been there in a while, but, they demand the same things of an amateur actor that a professional company would demand of them, of the time and the commitment and, you know, just doing the work. The real difference is it's the paycheck. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that there's a certain, you know, they, like you say, they demand a level of involvement and dedication.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say quality because that denigrates community theater. I don't want to do that. St. Pete City Theater still does amazing work. The Carrollwood Players in Tampa, and I'm sure there are others in Tampa that I don't even know about. And send me an email. Let me know about what you do there because this is something I think I'm going to start writing about because there is some fabulous work here. You are involved with Voices of Hope for Aphasia.
I am.
And I'd like for you to tell those folks listening what that is and what you do there.
Thank you. Okay, Voices of Hope for Aphasia is a not-for-profit group based here in St. Pete. Their main office and aphasia center is in the Tyrone area, across the street from the mall and the crossroads area. They are an organization that helps people with a language disorder after a stroke or traumatic brain injury. I became involved in it because Debbie, she's the executive director of the organization.
Oh, she's a powerhouse.
She's the most incredible human being I've ever met. I don't know how she does everything she does in a day, but it's impressive.
You hear that, Debbie? You're listening to this?
Yeah. But yeah, it's a tremendous organization that does a lot of good for a lot of people.
Yeah.
They started very grassroots at the Sunshine Center here in St. Petersburg as sort of a support group, which is turned now into, after their growth and then the online work that they started doing during COVID and all that, to one of the largest aphasia centers and providers in the entire nation. And they are really leading the charge across the nation for what support can mean to those who are struggling.
With Debbie not being in the room here, Where did, can you, maybe you can tell me where her commitment started with this? I mean, and what that means to her. I mean, it's a very select kind of thing, and I had it, explained to me once.
Yeah, it's a very niche thing. I can't give you the whole story because it's more her story to tell. But
understood.
Debbie is someone who had a very successful career in technology.
Mm-hmm.
After 9/11, she decided that she really needed to sort of change direction a little bit, and she might need to help people. And one of the things that she figured out to do was to go back to school to become a speech therapist. I believe she initially thought about working with children, but then through the different classes and experiences that she was given, she ended up focusing on this. And she opened a private practice. She's a licensed speech-language pathologist. She had a very successful career as that and an amazing client base. And through her work with that, she became involved with Voices of Hope for Aphasia. And she's now their executive director. And
She's also a fabulous actress.
Yeah,
and
she is.
She came up through community theater, I believe.
She did. She did. She did it occasionally in college, but then she got away from it for 20 years.
Really?
Yeah. And then a friend of hers in Washington, D.C. told her, you need to go audition for something. And she did. And she did Crimes of the Heart at St. Pete City Theater.
Mm.
Very nice production from what I hear. I didn't see it. And then they talked her into auditioning again. And she walked into West Coast Players to audition for Same Time Next Year that I was directing. And that's where we met. And we became very fast friends. And she was – I immediately knew that she's the kind of person I like to work with because we sort of process things the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I don't know if it was 16, 18 months later, we started to see each other outside the theater. And
there you go.
The rest is history.
And she is directing Fully Committed at the Office Central. This is how we wind up the show with a play.
All right.
Debbie Onus, listen, this is cool, is directing Fully Committed by Becky Mode, which you really have to go see at theoffcentral.com. Theoffcentral.com is the website, of course. It's called The Off Central. It was called Studio Grand Central, but we don't call it that anymore.
Nope.
It's called The Off Central.
Rebranded. Buildings painted and everything.
And this is a very cool theater. What is it, 42 seats?
43 seats,
43
yeah.
seats. So you really are right there.
Yeah.
So you're right there in this cramped, creepy little office that poor Sam is working at Foam.
Yeah.
You know, taking Gwyneth Paltrow's assistant, I think, was my favorite.
Yeah, he's something. Guy. He is something.
Bye.
Bye. So,
anyway, okay. Stop, Bill. Good series here. Fully Committed runs through March 12th over there at the Off Central. It is, as I've said numerous times, theoffcentral.com, and I hope you go and see it because it's definitely a hoot and holler and all of those things. Alan Mooney Jr., thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much, sir.
And we will see you down the line the next time.
Sounds good.
From stpetecatalyst.com.